Thank you. Thank you. person is just stuck in a lift he will be here at within 10 minutes. Sort of like that.
You know what they say about lift? Because minds of their own, it might be said never to get stuck for their own day.
Yes, just going to help you.
Thank you.
With
with those words and say, this is what the team is all about, and you are welcome to part there, you know, as full members of this very vibrant team. Thank you very much. My name is Elegant Chevelin. I'm the chairperson of the committee. And I'll ask other members to introduce themselves because we have new members. And obviously you are seeing people in management for the first time in your official capacity as members of the committee. Mr. Muratova and your team, you are welcome. And I hope we knock off before 1 o'clock because tomorrow is the big day. Some of us are going to buy new suits later today. No, I don't put on a tie. I put on a collar. I've never seen Umfundis wearing a tie, and he's short because it's hot. You are welcome. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. My name is Togo Mazurumu, the National Assembly Member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Nzamo Tapulutau. I am a member of the Portfolio Committee representing, and I'll say this for once only, been sent to this committee by the DA. I previously was with the Energy Portfolio Committee. I'm sure everybody has that too.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Andrikus van der Westhuizen, and I'm joining the committee from the Portfolio Committee of High Education and Training, where some of the Department of Labour's former colleagues are presently reside, and I'm looking forward to learning a lot about this new, for me, new environment. Thank you, Chair.
And behind you,
My name is Sam Murotova, the Deputy Director General responsible for Public Employment Services in the Department of Labour. And let me apologize on behalf of the Director General, Mr. Ntebo. Mr. Sikwebu, maybe I can let allow members to also hear their voices if they can introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Olaf Sikwebu in Employment Services, working with Mr. Mbotov.
And I'm Tendane Ramurongo from the Department of Labor. I'm in Research Policy and Planning Unit.
I'm Gibson Jenica Kona from the Department of Labor.
Honorable members, I'm Ola Nene from the Department of Labor, Parliamentary Labor Office.
I'm Melelo Mnonywa from the Office of the Minister of Labour. Thank you.
I must start by saying, Mr. Muratova, that I'm not very happy with the you send in the information late yesterday for the meeting of today. And, you know, I myself never even have time to go through the document that you have sent because I'm listening this morning. I think this should be the first and the last time. I mean, you know, this is the beginning of the year. Let's start on a very new page, my daughter, of making sure that we get documents on time, because you knew about this thing long time ago, that they need to be feedback. This is a second meeting, it's a second, we're actually getting a second bite on the MTGs. And that this information, I'm sure, was you know, done long time ago. So please, let's get our information on time, possibly 3 days before the meeting. It would be nicer if we get them a week before, you know, because if you send a document just within 24 hours of the meeting, you are denying us a chance of familiarizing us ourselves with the documents, because I'm sure it took you more than one day to prepare these documents. And how do you expect us to read and understand and apply our minds within 24 hours? We've got other things that we do apart from reading documents from you. Please, I just hope this is the first and the last time. And send that message to the teacher. I think we need to write a letter to him. Because next time if people give us papers at the last minute, after we have given you notice of meeting, you know, on time, we will have to send you back. I'm afraid we are going to end up doing that, because I think that is the only thing that will make people to take us seriously, because you'll have to explain why were you in Cape Town. And, you know, because then it becomes fruitless expenditure coming to these meetings. So, and we don't want to approve documents and just for the sake of progress when we did not apply our minds to those documents. Please, that. Okay. Can you introduce yourself in the thing again? But we've got new members in the community, and welcome. Welcome to WIP. Introduce yourself.
Thank you, sir. Good morning. I'm Aaron Yenamba, representing the only organization that has 100 years, the ANC, an MP, and a member of the Port Local Committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairperson, honorable members. We have been asked to update the Portfolio Committee on Labour on the Millennium Development Goals. Now, this task, if I can, I have colleagues who will be presenting, will be making the rest of the presentation. But just to highlight a few things. The first is that we all know that there are 8 Millennium Development Goals that have been adopted. And out of this, we highlighted the ones that the Department of Labor is contributing towards. The first one being eradicating extreme poverty, the second one being promoting gender inequality and empowerment, the third one combating HIV, AIDS, malaria and other diseases, and then the fourth one ensuring environmental sustainability, and the last one developing global partnership for development. Now, the way we have aligned ourselves to contribute towards these MDGs is similar to how we have also aligned the Department of Labor's intervention towards the government's 12 national outcomes. Because the 12 national outcomes that all departments are working towards are also linked to the development, that is Millennium Development Goals. In the, within the Department of Labor, we have key results areas, 9 of them. And if you take this key results area, you are able to map the key result area against the Millennium Development Goals and against the government national outcomes. For other members who may not be familiar with the key result areas, we have contribution to employment creation, promoting equity in the labor market, protecting vulnerable workers, strengthening multilateral and bilateral relations, strengthening social protection, right up to strengthening institutional capacity of the department. Now, like I said, we are able to take the Millennium Development Goals and the targets, and then against that map the relevant KRAs of the department that are relevant to that Millennium Development Goals. If you take the first one, eradicate extreme poverty, you will notice that within the KRAs of the department, we have KRA 1, 3, 5, and 6 that is aligned to that goal. MDG 2, our KRA 2 is aligned, and then in terms of MDG 6 and 8 and the relevant targets, our KRA 4 is aligned to those. And the second point that I wanted to make is that in responding and providing an update on the Millennium Development Goals, as a country, we are expected to submit a report to the United Nations General Assembly. Now, in order to do that, there are a number of processes that are set in government because all these Millennium Development Goals cut across a range of departments. So it is not possible for the Department of Labor to prepare that report alone. What government has done was to give the responsibility to SA, Statistics South Africa, as an organ of state which is the custodian of all statistics, to be the one that consolidate all the statistics across all departments and to draft the country report. That country report is then given to the presidency, and it is the minister in the presidency, in the planning commission, as the minister responsible for monitoring and evaluation, who then takes the responsibility of presenting that report. And he did so in terms of presenting that report in March last year. And in terms of the Department of Labor, like all other departments, we are assigned to a number of Millennium Development Goals. And in this case, we were assigned to work towards eradicating extreme poverty and hunger. Although our other statistics in terms of those MDGs that I've highlighted are also taken into account when this report are compiled. So we make contributions to those MDGs. Now, the other point that is worth mentioning is that in terms of this particular indicator, the statistics in terms of MDG 1 were drawn, like we said, from SA and the Social Development Department. They provided detailed statistics around the proportion of the population below $1 per day, share of the poorest quintile in national consumption, growth rate of GDP, right up to proportion of population below minimum level of dietary energy consumption. And I'm now going to give Mrs. Ramlongo an opportunity to give you some of the facts and figures and to take you through the Department of Labor's contribution towards those MDGs. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. The following slide give us a preview of what statistics South Africa found in terms of the country's achievement towards meeting the Millennium Development Goals. In 1994, we see the proportion of population below $1 per day, increasing from 11.3 in 2000 to 5 in the latest statistics of 2006. And the target was 5.7, and that means that the country had achieved or is moving towards achieving that goal of 5.7% in 2015. And regarding the gap between the ratio of 1%, in fact $1 per day, we see the decrease from 3.2 in 2000 to 1.1, and the target was 1.6, and that is considered to be an achievement as well. Regarding poverty gap ratio of $1.25 per day, the decrease was from 5.4 to 2.3, while the target was 2.7, and also that shows the country achieving the goal by 2015. Now coming to the department, as Ms. Morotova indicated, our key result areas will be spread across the different programs. And I'm going to start now with the Inspection and Enforcement Service, what they did towards meeting the Millennium Development, or towards contributing to the achievement of the Millennium Development Goals. We find that Inspection and Enforcement Service contribute to MDG 3, and in doing that, the branch has implemented the employment equity since its promulgation. The next point in this program is that labor inspectors are inspecting workplace for procedural compliance in terms of employment equity, and cases of alleged unfair discrimination have been referred to CCMA, and in the past 5 years, designated employers have been subjected to the DG review process for substantive compliance regarding this employment equity. And the report shows very little progress made to achieve employment equity. I assume we are aware of the country's slow pace in achieving or in addressing discrepancies in terms of equity in the labor market, and that's what our reports are showing currently. Once again, we find that there are technical assistance guidelines that have been developed to assist in the implementation of the employment equity, having realized the challenge of slow pace towards bringing in equity in the labor market. And we also did employment equity roadshows to create awareness and assist employers in reporting. And employment equity system has been developed, and employers are currently submitting or submitting their report online to the department. In terms of contributing to eradicating extreme poverty, we find that workers in specific sectors, as the chairperson highlighted earlier, those that are considered vulnerable in the agriculture and domestic sector, have been identified indeed as vulnerable workers, to which the department's intervention has focused on currently. And their sectoral determinations aimed towards these vulnerable workers, and these determinations set minimum employment conditions and wages in the sector, and those have been promulgated and are currently implemented. And labor inspectors, once again, are responsible for inspections and enforcing those determinations. In the past 3 years, the department identified problematic sectors for bleed inspections, and these are sectors that are identified as having high risk in terms of occupational health and safety. And the specific programs are also piloted and implemented to increase awareness in terms of occupational health. And the inspection program's contribution towards ensuring environmental sustainability is that occupational health and safety regulations are promulgated and implemented in line with the Act, the relevant Act, and the department works jointly with government departments and also with other national and international bodies towards ensuring safety in the workplace. Now, coming to Public Employment Service as a program and its relevant contribution towards eradicating, in fact, towards meeting the Millennium Development Goals, we find that this branch or program has got to achieve towards that contribution in the following way: by promoting employment to citizens, by improving access of labor market to work seekers, by providing opportunities for new entrants in the labor market to gain experience, by improving employment prospects of work seekers, of people with disabilities, and those facing retrenchment. And also the program facilitates access of work seekers to training and provide the regulatory framework for the operation of public employment agencies, registration of vacancies, employment of qualifying foreign workers, and other related matters. And also this program is responsible of promoting employment growth and workplace productivity. Now, when we come specifically to the goals, a public employment service program contributes towards meeting the first goal. And now we'll come to how they do that. In fact, maybe to start with how they contribute to promoting gender and equity and empowering women, we find that Employment Service Bill was developed and will soon, in fact, it has been developed, it is currently with NEDLAC, and it will soon be approved for public comment. And now, when we come to the statistics of the contribution of the program towards the MDG1, we find that the program has got, I'm not going to read the numbers, they might be too long to name, but that's how the program contributed currently in terms of job seekers who are reported for registration in different categories. And that is occupational categories. And we also find a number there of job seekers who were referred or placed to employment, and also job seekers who were assessed before they had been placed to employment opportunities. And the program also renders service to employers. And in this case, we find that the statistics on the number of companies registered for opportunities, those are companies that came to the department to indicate that they've got employment opportunities existing, and those were registered in our employment service system. And the number of opportunities registered, in other words, we had 1,205 companies, but within companies you might find that there are various or different number of work opportunities existing, and then the row that talks to number of opportunities registered will be linked to those companies, and that's why the number of jobs or opportunities are higher than the number of companies registered, because one company might have more than one employment opportunity existing. And the program also handles application for corporate and general work permits. And those are the numbers in the two different years that we are reporting on. And we also have number of companies assisted through training layoff scheme that the department is currently, in fact, since the economic crisis of 2008-09, the department, together with other partners, introduced a training layoff scheme. And those are the companies that have been assisted up to date. Also through the Institution Productivity South Africa, we find that there are a number of companies that are assisted through Workplace Challenge Program, and those are the numbers between the 2 years. And we also find the number of companies assisted with their turnaround strategies. These are strategies aimed at I was on the number of companies assisted with turnaround strategies to increase their product competitiveness and also to increase their marketability. And we also have number of small medium enterprise managers who had been trained through the program Public Employment Services, and also the number of jobs saved are reflected as well on the screen. In terms of contributing to employment equity in the labor market, we find that there are 33 companies which were assisted through the training of layoff. It's a detailed slide of what I presented earlier, and I'm not going to read the numbers. I will move on to Program 4, which is Labor Policy and Industrial Relations, and its contribution towards eradicating extreme poverty and hunger. We find that South Africa increased the real wages of workers covered by sectoral determination during 2001 to 2011 period, particularly those that we consider as vulnerable, domestic and farm workers. And employment in this sector, which are covered by minimum wage legislation, increased significantly over the period at around 2.9% per annum. And in real numbers, we find that through the implementation of minimum wages, employment in these sectors increased from 3.5 million in 2001 to just over 4 million in 2007. And once again, these are the statistics that talks to reduction of poverty of people working in the different sectors outlined there. And we see the domestic, the farm, the forestry, and the security, as indicated earlier, including the contract cleaning sector, which are the most vulnerable to poverty. And what is reflected here is, according to statistics available, the different level in which statisticians measure poverty, from ultra poverty to poor poverty and to non-poverty. And when we look maybe at the ultra poverty, which is the most severe, we can see for ourselves, if we look specifically on vulnerable sectors, that in 2001, 45.3% of those working in the domestic sector were in ultra poverty. But that decreased in 2007, because from 45.3% we moved to 36.6%. And regarding the farm workers, we see the same trend of decrease. And also in the forestry, there was decrease to the ultra poor. And also, in fact, unfortunately, with the security, instead of decreasing the number of ultra poverty, we find that there was a slight increase from 11.6 to 14.7. And when the same applies to the contract cleaning, and that tells us something that needs to be addressed on a serious note there. And once again, the program through the Labor Relations Act allows the Minister of Labor to extend collective agreements concluded by bargaining councils to non-parties. That's another way in which the program or the department contributes towards eradicating poverty, by ensuring that bargaining councils reach their wage agreement, and when necessary, those are extended to non-parties. And by extending this collective agreement to non-parties, it covers vulnerable workers who normally would have been excluded by those wage increase and social security benefits like pension funds and medical aid scheme. And over a period of approximately 10 years, average wage settlement rate in South Africa was around 8%, and the wage settlement rate was more than the average inflation rate of 6%. And this slide zooms deeply into the contribution of wage settlement, whereby it looked at skilled workers, and we find that skilled workers are on that average weekly wage, and there was an increase of 9%. The same applies to semi-skilled workers and unskilled workers. And the lowest wage income of unskilled worker in South Africa compared to the $1 per day was $9 per day. In other words, what the slide is saying is that of the unskilled workers, according to international or the MDG poverty measure, which measure poverty by considering those people who are living with $1 per day, in our case we find that the unskilled are living with $9 per day, which is way above the dollar given to measure poverty for the MDG. And this indicates the lowest wage income for the lowest paid worker in the bargaining council system across all sectors, and that is above the $1, as I said. And once again, to promote employment, to promote equity in the labor market through Program 4, we find that to create a conducive working environment for women participation in empowerment, the following legislation has been implemented. That's the Employment Equity Act, its regulations, and the Code of Good Practice. And we also have technical assistance guidelines that promote equity in the workplace by promoting employment equity opportunities and fair treatment in employment through elimination of unfair discrimination, and implementing affirmative action measures to redress the disadvantages in employment experienced by designated groups, which include black people, women, and people with disability. Once again, there has been progress in terms of representation of women in positions within the decision-making powers. Even though there's progress, but it is very it is minimal, because we see that top management levels, women constituted 18.2% in 2008, and that increased by less than a percentage to 19% in 2011 across all positions in top management level. And in senior management, we find women constituting 28.3% in 2008, and that increased by a percent to 29.3% in 2011. However, when we look positively, the positive contribution that we see is that professionally qualified women constitute 40%, and as a department, we find that as work in progress, because these are the people who would qualify to be in the senior management level and the top level. In other words, the level that prepare women for senior management and top level management, there's good progress there at 40% in 2011. Chairperson, does the progress regarding the department's contribution towards the country's achievement of Millennium Development Goals. I'm not sure if I should move now to other things that were raised earlier, or we leave it up to date for now. Regarding South Africa's companies, preferring foreign workers over national, and in response, the department has conducted an investigation into the driving forces and the extent of migrants in towns closer to borders, and we are currently the investigation was done in Musina, and this will be followed by extensive research in order to get better understanding of the rationale behind this dynamics happening in the labor market. In other words, we have noted the concern, and we are working on trying to get the results to that. And regarding wage gap, a study that was conducted, in fact, the statistics that we showed indicate fluctuations. There are areas where wage gaps are contributing towards poverty eradication, but there are areas where it's not happening in a significant way. And I think that's what the committee raised previously. And once again, we realized that maybe we should also take cognizance of the fact that these interventions on their own cannot eradicate poverty. We should talk about multi-pronged.
Maybe let's start from where the person was thinking about
the. Okay. Starting from the beginning,
yeah.
On the concerns raised, I indicated that the committee was not happy with the way in which South African companies are preferring foreign workers instead of nationals in terms of employment. And the department has conducted some investigations into those concerns to establish the real factors behind, or the driving forces behind, those preferences of foreign workers. And as I indicated, we are also planning to conduct research into this problem, but the department is aware of the problem, and it is currently working towards coming with intervention into this trend of preferring foreign workers in certain sectors of the labor market. And regarding wage gaps, we noted in the progress we gave towards meeting the goals of the Millennium Development, that there are sectors where the department provides sectoral determination, minimum wages, and we find that to some extent those interventions are contributing towards eradicating poverty. But what some researchers have found is that minimum wages, sectoral determination on their own cannot eradicate poverty. We should talk of multi-pronged strategy, look at various factors that could help us as a country to reduce the number of people who are living below the $1 per day. The department is currently looking at the possibility of extending social protection to categories of workers who are currently not covered by the unemployment insurance, and those include the public servants, youth registered for learnership, and others. And also, the department is considering measures to ensure that vulnerable workers are covered by beneficiaries, are covered as beneficiaries of the compensation fund. That was in response to the concern raised about some sections of workers who are not covered by the two funds, the compensation and the UIF. And regarding MDG3, it was found that the enforcement and compliance of mechanism in Employment Equity Act made it easy for employers to circumvent certain provisions. And on that note, the department is now currently in the process of amending areas that have been identified as loopholes in order to strengthen the enforcement and compliance provision of this act. And this will assist in developing regulations that will advance the cause of women, and in addition, the entrenchment of equal pay of equal value in the Employment Act through the amendment process that's currently being considered in the department. And in response to combating HIV and AIDS, the department, in fact, the ILO adopted recommendations on HIV and AIDS in June 2010, and the Department of Labor or the country acted immediately to bring a code of good practice on key aspects of HIV and AIDS in the workplace in line with each provision of the recommendation. And the process is due to be completed at the end of March this year and will be supplemented by reviewing the technical assistance guideline, which is currently in operation. And on MDG7, South Africa strengthened partnership with SADC through various ways, which include being a member of, we know South Africa is a member of the South African Development Countries, ELF, Employment, Labor and Social Affairs Committee. We are in that committee, and that committee deals with regional employment and other relevant labor issues. Also, several memorandums have been entered into with countries within SADC region, the Lesotho, Mozambique, Zimbabwe. There are memorandums that the department is currently in. Some of them are under review, so that's the relationship or the role that the department is playing on behalf of the country towards SADC in relation to employment and labor issues. And
thank you. There are issues here, as Morodova opened the meeting, that he said, you know, some of these goals can only be achieved through collective. Other departments putting their bids and others, but then we ourselves as labor, there is some roles that we need to play, you know, and at the same time ensure that our partners, our counterparts in other departments, giving them even advice how important and how, you know, that the part that they need to roll to, the role that they need to play that is impacting on us, we need to ensure that we make sure that they they play that role so that they are not left behind. There are other things that are embedded in the system, members, you know, like the question of preference for foreign workers. I'm sure business people prefer foreign workers because they can pay them less, mostly because some of them are illegal immigrants in the country, and that some of them can even pay in kind through food and old gear as forms of payment. In other areas, but we're in South Africa, yeah. Even South Africans pay other South Africans with alcohol. There are records of the top system that is still in use, particularly in the Western Cape. I don't think it's used anywhere else except here. We stand to be corrected. But, you know, through the interventions by the department, there is a move away from the top system. I met with a farmer who was using the top system just 2 weeks ago. And he entered the system after interacting with the department. That is only in December. And for the second time in their lifetime as working on those farms, those workers got their full wages in January. That people can go and buy their own dope. We are not banning dope. We are not banning alcohol. But we are saying that you can't pay people with alcohol. You need to give them money. When they want to buy alcohol, they can go and buy it for themselves. Some of us take alcohol here, but Parliament doesn't pay us with dope. They don't give us alcohol. Chevrolet, you'll get your Johnny Walker Green Label, 3 bottles for the month. And then plus 200 rand, so that's all for you this month. But I'm giving you my money and I can decide whether I want to buy Mampur with it or the homemade brew, or not just buy alcohol at all. The danger with this system is that it pushes our people into addiction, that people get addicted, and with addiction, what suffers are the children. So fighting poverty, part of those systems are not helping us to fight poverty, they're actually entrenching poverty. But I think we need to again enforce these laws of paying people the, you know, what is due to them, regardless of whether they are legal, illegal, or they are South Africans or non-South Africans. If we enforce that, there's no reason why somebody will take a risk of getting illegal workers. But we need to enforce this thing, and people who can enforce this is us as labor, but through working with the enforcement agencies. Members, this is open for discussions, inputs, and even questions and clarity. Honorable Masrumu.
Thank you, Chair. Kwame expression is njalo kusoshawa nedonja kakhulu. Njalo kusoshawa nedonja kakhulu. You would want to be reminded the Department of Labor is a common denominator. Therefore, every time the criticism is leveled on through you, Mr. Mbuto, to the department today, it should be taken away because you cut across.
I'm just hoping. When I came out of hibernation the other time, I was very unfortunate because the following questions were already asked, but they were never adequately answered. The questions are when, where, what, who, which, when, why, and how. The questions, they were never addressed. I just want to suggest, Mr. Muruto, through you, bro, I want to suggest, because we are running towards a second decade of our freedom, even if the consequences are not very nice, but we are running towards a second decade. I just want to suggest right away, because we need to be practical now. We've been theorizing for so long, we need to be practical. I think in order for us particularly to deal effectively and make positive impact, especially in the agricultural sector, I suggest we would want to bring on board, and I hope, and I'm crossing my fingers, that the following departments will not hesitate to be brought on board. From where we are coming from, the physical experience has shown us, all of us, those who have the chance to be exposed to this experience, if you wish to build capacity and hope that in the next 120 days, we can be able to look at practical capacity building measure. I'm encouraged by what the lady has said. I forgot her name, I'm sorry. Here I'm looking at your coordination with agriculture department, human settlement, transport, basic education, health and home affairs. And somebody can be persuaded to take responsibility to coordinate this plasma for addressing particular agricultural sector, because that's the base of the economy, food production. You need workers who are very healthy here. Very healthy workers. And I can assure you, from that experience, from what we have seen, we've experienced, owners of this area and culture are making enough. And I don't think if they are getting engaged, there should be any problem about making profit, because they are making enough, especially in the Western Cape. One farmer was so bold enough to stand up in front of us and say, this is it, you are an employer of choice. We make a lot of bucks in terms of dollars through export. Why? And he was quiet. He was not even very conscious of the fact that he was actually disappointing us with that comment. Because we look at the workers, you begin to wonder how far behind Mr. Slaver is, you know, from where I am, looking at the conditions, living conditions of the workers. And he's so bold enough to say, but an employer of choice. We make a lot of bucks. And you could see, you could read, it is written on their faces, they're making adequate bucks. But look at the workers. So I'm trying to say capacity building here will also, if you bring on board this cluster, and also try to concentrate some little resources on building capacity with regard to knowledge of your inspectors, knowledge and information, basic training to be able to differentiate between good and bad, right and wrong,
symbol based. There was this argument between one worker in one farm and a healthy and safety inspector, where this guy was trying to make an input very interesting, and the worker stood up and said, "No, you were here to buy a car, you're not here to talk to us. You came here, you talked to the farmer, you bought a car, you walked away, you never said you went to us. Today you are saying you were here. Yes, you were here, but you're here to buy a car, not to talk to us." But he reported us. That's it. I mean, we I'm just taking an example, but we never queried it. We never queried it. But I'm just trying to say our health inspectors need to be empowered, especially in understanding the need, the necessity to be able to interpret the law in simple language to the workers. Because honestly, in the Western Cape, I also grew up next to the farming areas in Mabuhol and Kroblas. I was young then, I couldn't care. But I think if really this trend is a common thing all over the country, we are not doing very well. We are not making any impact. We spend too much time in boardrooms, boardroom meetings. If this is a common trend, a common tendency amongst farm owners to behave in this manner, they don't even, some farming areas don't even have signals of compliance, little signals. If you look and watch physically at the container as long from the length of the container, roughly from here to Golden Acre, no windows, but people are supposed to live in that container. And they're supposed to wake up in the morning, wash themselves, go to work, come back still alive in the afternoon. A long container without windows. Conditions are still there. And if we didn't embargo on this oversight, we couldn't have seen it. Who could have thought these things are still existing? So I'm saying we need to very sharply, closely engage the farm owners. They need to make their contribution. But we need to engage them. And we need to have time frames. Because we cannot continue to live and exist amongst us with this kind of environment where workers are supposed to exist and still make profit for the farmer. So I'm just saying, if it's my suggestion, if we really care, let's bring on board this department to function as a cluster for a particular field of time and address living conditions as well as working conditions in the farming community. It's just a mess. Nobody really, after 17 years of this freedom, can ever exist under this condition. It's a mess. And I'm not leveling criticism on the department. I'm saying department is cut across. It's a common denominator. They must come up with this kind of success program that will also come with a speed of thought for implementation.
What we picked during the inspection, the relationship between some farmers and some of our inspectors leaves lots of questions. And we have asked the provincial director to investigate that case where workers said, "No, but this man comes here, he talks to the farmer and buys things and goes. So are you bringing him back to us here?" They actually rejected. They didn't want him. They didn't want him during the inspection. So just know that that matter we refer to it for further investigation. Honorable Abela, do you have a... Honorable Mudau? Yeah.
Is it my turn?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. I just want to raise a couple of issues, just for clarity, for my own sake, and obviously these things have been rushed and dusted, that will be fine, but this doesn't bring me up to speed very, very quickly. One of the remarks by the chair had to do with enforcement, and obviously that means inspectors and stuff like that. Just for my own edification, does the department have enough inspectors to do this inspecting that needs to be done? Because unless you have the capacity to do it, you're going to just end up like the people in the Department of Energy who have to cut down on the number of inspections just to make sure that they are doing something. And you are on a treadmill. I need to also raise something else just for, again, these are really for me edification and clarification in my own mind. On the slide on page 10, right at the bottom, and that's linked, and that's why I raised it here, the reports show very little progress made to achieve equity in the workplace. Now, again, I think, maybe let me say this, I think all of us in here, everybody in this country would like to see all of these things that these ideas that are envisaged. But we need to have the capacity to make sure that it happens. So in terms of the question that I raised earlier on about inspectorate capacity and stuff like that, how does that gel with the equity thing? Because unless you inspect it, it never gets done. On page 15, it's a very strong statement being made at the bottom. Purpose of the P is employment service, promoting employment growth and workplace productivity. That's a very strong statement, and the thing that jumps at me is, how do they do this? How can they do this? What have they done? Because one of the issues that we know internationally, productivity wise, we're doing very, very badly. What are we doing? What are they doing? What is it that these institutions are doing and do? And this employment growth. You know, the numbers are out. Yesterday we had the numbers. The numbers are very, very clear. We have 360,000 people employed, 170,000 people still without jobs. So the numbers in terms of last year and job creation, we're not doing well. What are these things doing to actually promote employment growth and what, especially workplace productivity? Do they go into these places and say to the people, you're supposed to be on the production line for 2 hours, you've just been standing there for 30 minutes and you're smoking for 15? How does it work? Just another one. It's just sort of like they say, you know, to wet my feet in this portfolio. Page 19. I'm fascinated. I've heard this concept previously, and I want some explanations. How does it work? What does it mean? At the bottom of that page, number of jobs saved. Just clarify the concept for me. What does it mean when you say you saved the job? Who has done what? Because the job is either there or it's not there. And if it saved it, was it being threatened? And if it was being threatened, what was threatening it? And how do you save it so that at least the future can understand what these things mean? And just the last point. There are many others, but I just think this, if responded to, will help me in grappling with the issues as we go forward. I think this one is a little faded here. I think page 23. All the indices there are very interesting, showing, you know, a positive trend. Promotion of household by poverty status, da 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 da. But forestry, if you look at forestry, the non-poor, okay, the non-poor, there are, in 2007 compared to 2001, less non-poor than in 2001. What happened? In other words, there are more poor people in the forestry section Was there job losses? What happened there? Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, if I could start also with it on that same page that my colleague referred to, page 23. If we look at the sectors that were listed there, it seems to me as if the majority of those sectors between 2001 and 2007 showed a growth in the number of people that were ultra poor and poor. The percentage of non-poor people dropped in retail, forestry, taxi, security, contract cleaning, and we all know that 2007 was just before the economic meltdown, because I think when we look at these figures we must also keep in mind the major economic changes over the last few years. So I would like to know, what is your explanation why the percentage of people that are classified on the ultra poor and poor have increased so strongly, because that is a tendency or a trend that I think we must seriously investigate, and I'm glad we have the director of research here. The other issue is also for me to link on to my colleague in terms of the number of enterprises that were assisted, distressed companies that were assisted. It seems to me as if that number is decreasing fast. Now, it could be because some companies have already closed their doors, so the numbers that need assistance are smaller. But it also seems to me then as if we need less input from the department if less companies need their assistance. And my question is, to what extent is the department responsive enough in changing their numbers around? We've just heard there may be a shortage of inspectors. We're actually still waiting for that answer. But then it may be that some people are here in excess jobs, because they are there to assist companies, but there are no companies to exist, or the number of companies to exist have decreased. And then lastly, Chairperson, on page 20, and if I may still carry my Department of Higher Education and Training hat for a moment, we know that Minister Nzimande is sitting on the National Skills Fund, which previously resorted under the Department of Labour. And that fund throughout the last financial year must have reached the amount of 7 billion rand in unspent funds meant for training. Of billion. It was over 6 billion at the beginning of this financial year, and according to my information, for the largest part of the year, money was still coming in faster than it was being spent. Now, it just seems to me as if you want to train people through a training layoff scheme, money cannot be the problem. The money is there. Now, my question is just, in these dire economic times, why is it that in only 4 of our 9 provinces, people were assisted in terms of the training layoff scheme? And some of the provinces that, according to my mind, must be some of the poorest provinces, and I'm talking here Eastern Cape, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, no money, not a cent has been spent in terms of training layoff schemes in those provinces. And it just seems to me to be wrong, and I hope that the officials will prove me to be wrong in my expectation that the money is there, people that need the money is there, and that somewhere government is not really doing what we should. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that I wasn't aware of the 7 billion. I knew that there was money in there. And the reason why we didn't, we actually tried to meet with this thing in the beginning of the year, but we were told that it is outside our sphere as the Committee of Labour, because the function is taken out of labour,
yes,
in higher education. So we can only get involved only in a joint operation with the Department what you are saying is that we need to do something about every A20 city with this. We have a program within labor that is called sheltered employment. It does need money. And it does exactly what, you know, it does training. We're training people in skills, carpentry, you name them. The sheltered employment program is still with us. And that maybe if they're having problems building, we could send that money to sheltered employment that it will be used. I think as we go, you will understand how, you know, how this committee works. And I mean, the department actually, you know, how many divisions does it have in the department and what do they do? We have South African productivity, South Africa. But that does the part. Anyway, the Rotova will explain those to Honorable Muta. Honorable Nagambo, take your mind.
Thank you very much. I forgot earlier to say compliments of the centenary. I think let me welcome the report. It's showing us that something is happening. Even if it might not be to our expectation. The just a couple points. Let me start with in the area of the training layoffs. What I like to be corrected. My understanding is that, yes, it was not in 1 billion. I think there were more than 1 billion money that was put aside for the purposes of how to assist the distressed companies. And there was a procedure for that, which was facilitated by CCMA, that a company has to apply. And then there's a number of issues that the department has to look at. It's not a question of just saying, I am distressed, so therefore help me, and then money is pumped. I just want to be corrected, and I think there was a time frame for that to happen. I'm not sure whether it was an open-ended matter that has to be attended to. So that's why I'm saying I always like to be corrected. Within that, Chairperson, if I'm looking at this report in page 18, you are talking of 9 companies. 19 companies. And out of these 19 companies, 6,351 workers, I think, benefited as a result of this. I'm not sure whether did I get you correctly. Then the question now is, surely that amount of money that was put in place for training layoffs, I don't think it was exhausted, given this number of companies that benefited out of that money and these workers. There must be a balance, and I would like to know, what is that money doing? Where is it? Is it sitting in the bank, generating interest for what? Are you still continuing with the layoff training? I think that's why my question is, Chair, on this point. The second point is on page 23. the taxi industry. I'm not sure, but I'm aware of unemployment insurance fund. In fact, the department used to be in a campaign trying to register. I think also working with the Department of Transport, because the taxi industry, that industry belongs to the Department of Transport, and then our part as Department of Labor is to make sure that those who are working in that industry do benefit in the IF and the likes. Now, this study that you are reporting on today, is it an indication of some kind of compliance by the taxi industry, in particular with regards to social benefits, in particular your UIF, is an indication of that? Because I know in some, I'm not sure whether is there as a total determination in that industry. If there's no total determination, are you doing something in trying to deal with that? The third point, Chair, is on, I think it's the combination of page 26 and 27, because it deals with equity but focus on women. I think in the report you have made mention of 40%. My question will be, the 40% that you are reporting on, is it inclusive of the public sector? I'm raising this because the Commission on Employment Equity last year, they were very close when they were looking at the reports that were submitted to it by employers, in particular in the private sector. It looked like there's nothing that is done with regards to respecting this piece of legislation. So my question is, this 40%, is it across the board or the specific industry? Because I know of the public sector where at least this is being looked at. I mean, the presenter was a woman. The other point, Chair, is this one is just a comment, but I think on page 28, the preference of foreign nationals by South African companies, it looks like to me we were just looking at the at agriculture in the most. But I know of even in other industry, your metal and engineering industry, you will find companies that are using foreign nationals because of the advantage. One, they don't join unions. Two, some of them, they are in the country illegally, so but they are using them in order not to pay them according to the collective agreements in those industries. So my point is, are you only focusing in the agricultural sector, not also in the private sector? The last point, sir, is I think in your report you have also made mention of, even if there are minimum wages and sectoral determinations that exist, but it appears that they are not addressing what we intend to address as a result, you are looking at doing something in that area. If possible, would you mind to share with us what plans do you have in place after determining that the existence of minimum wages and similar discrimination, they do not necessarily address the problem that has to be dealt with. Thank you very much, sir.
I was asked to facilitate the action. I was only asked to facilitate the action in the absence of the communication. Is there anything else that we need to say before the department comes in to respond to questions? Anything else?
Thank you, honorable members. Let me start with the first issue that the chairperson raised that other members have also commented on around the foreign workers. It is true, honorable members, that there are a number of issues that are happening with regard to migrant workers. But without repeating the questions, maybe just to give you a sense on a number of issues that the Department of Labor is already doing in that area. Firstly, on the issue of collaboration with other departments, honorable members will recall that we appeared before this committee with the Department of Home Affairs to illustrate the kind of joint projects that we are having and that we in the amendment of the legislation, that is the Immigration Act, honorable members will recall also the problem that we pointed out, which was the granting of more than 56,000 permits to Zimbabweans under an agreed dispensation which came to an end somewhere in November, December. And Home Affairs at the time indicated that they did get our representation and that they will be stepping up a campaign which we are quite aware of the deportation of people who overstayed beyond the permit. During the inspections, where we are able to, and having informed them on time, we are able to take them along. But in most cases, people have been very supportive to the Department of Labor's inspection in the farms, in particular has been the police, because they've accompanied us. And I must welcome the fact that other members of the committee and other honorable members have been exposed to the situation in farms. Because previously we have involved the chairperson of the Labor Portfolio Committee and the chairperson of the Select Committee on Public Enterprise and Labor, and at least they have had first-hand experience on the kind of incidences and situations that we come across when we conduct inspection. I'm not an inspector, but I do participate in the inspections as such, as part of the senior management of the department, so as to familiarize ourselves with the processes and to improve systems and where we can. I'm quite aware of the concern that honorable members have raised with regard to the conduct of some of our inspectors, especially when it comes to the relations that they have with some farmers. We were toying around the concept of inspectors without borders and the police inspection. And that is precisely because if you have a labor center located within a specific community. It's just like having a traffic cop who comes from a specific community and they work there. Now, chances of corruption will increase because the more they work in the area, the more familiar, and they develop a relationship with a particular employer. And that is why these police inspectors, including the notion of inspectors without borders, is something that we've been debating, so that you can have at any time inspectors that are not from a particular area coming in and so on. But honorable members may also be aware of the complications that arose at some stage. When you have to conduct inspections, you have to notify the employer. Otherwise, in some areas, and I'm sure the chairperson can attest to this, if you just turn up and you did not make an appointment, the farmers, together with AgriSA, argue that in most cases they are confronted by things like housebreaking, murders in the farms and so on, and as such they lock the gates and loosen their dogs so as to prevent the inspectors from coming in. And that on its own prevents inspectors that are not familiar with the areas from going in unannounced. And part of the things that we are doing with the amendment to the current legislation is to give inspectors more powers, and in some instances to be able to get other agencies such as the police and so on to assist us. We also have a provision in the current Employment Services Bill, and this was introduced precisely because where, for instance, the Immigration Act requires that people are given work permits or individual permits. As the Department of Labor, in most cases, we would say to Home Affairs, deny these people permits. And the reason would be that we do have people that have the necessary skills in our database that the employer requires. But we are being frustrated when we are taken to court because there is no sufficient legislation that assists us and binds employers to employ from amongst the locals, even if they are available. And that is why they argue to bring in foreign workers, and they put in aspects such as language and all that, that have no inherent requirement to the job that is being done. However, again, the key principle, and this is embraced also in the Employment Services Bill, is that all migrant workers, because we are signatories to the ILO codes, must enjoy the same rights as any South African worker. So the law protects everybody. And we are quite aware that when it comes to illegal migrants, or that is migrants that are in the country illegally, there is exploitation based on a number of sorts. We also proposed a research project to our research unit to look at some of the empirical evidence, and I'm glad that honorable members raised some of the anecdotes around the fact that you are employed because you can't join the union, you can enjoy, you can be paid less wages, you can get in kind or the DOP system. There are also anecdotes that South Africans are lazy, South Africans and all. But we need to come to the bottom of this anecdote and look at the extent to which they do influence the preference of most South African employers to resort to employing foreigners, even when we have South Africans that have the capability and the capacity. J- just to come on to the other issue, Honorable Chairperson, around the Honorable Masrumla, I think, raised a number of issues around some practical aspects. Now, I did mention the fact that we do have government clusters. Unfortunately, the way they are configured, they tend to leave other departments. And in the five clusters, immediately after this meeting, we'll be going to the economic cluster, where we serve with the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Home Affairs. In some cases, we take some of these matters at a technical committee level, and they are not elevated to cluster. And this is done precisely because we have to coordinate our efforts. We do work with a number of departments, such as transport. If you look at the fishing industry, and the fishing determination and ILO code, and the project that we had that affected a number of communities in the coastal line that were displaced as a result of the Department of Environmental Affairs removing the licensing rights on small boat fisheries. So you have one department taking a decision that end up with unintended consequences to another department. And then you end up with people unemployed who depended on fishing industry, and they come to the department, and most of them we end up with complications because they've not been contributing UI and a range of issues. So those are issues that we've been trying to achieve through the coordination processes. I've taken note of the issues raised with regard to strengthening our inspectors, and I think the DDG IES will raise some of the issues, but I think most of these issues are well known. And around professionalization of inspectors and so on. And we did get a report of the committee's visit in the farms, and they are looking into a range of issues that have been raised in this regard. And I must say that labor policy and industrial relations has led a number of interventions wherein we had meetings with AgriCETA, which is the Agri Association, where we have had a number of exchanges with them around how we can collectively work together. Now, some regions nationally they will cooperate, but then when it comes to regions, they agree with you on one thing, and when it comes to implementation, they become a stumbling block because they advise their local farmers otherwise. And we have suggested a number of adjustments in which during the invisos we can also meet with these farmers and not only through the inspections, but to talk to them around the partnership. Members will also be aware of the strengthening of civil society fund that we have, which is also aimed at funding organizations that are providing capacity to farm workers and other vulnerable sectors. And we are reviewing that program because we have since realized that we are not making the kind of impact that we should be making, and the kind of resources that should be allocated so that we can have a better impact in terms of ensuring that those vulnerable workers understand the labor laws. Now, there was a question from Honorable Daoun around the department's capacity and inspectors. I must be the first to say we don't have sufficient capacity. We have just above 1,000 inspectors for the whole country, and something like 50 or so odd inspector cars, including the heavy rented cars. Now, there have been a number of efforts. Treasury has given us an additional allocation, and there is a recruitment drive to assist to employ more inspectors. But there's also a challenge that we've raised before, that it takes quite some time to train an inspector to be up to speed to the level that you want. But the sooner you get there, there are other companies waiting on the site that take the very same inspector and pay them double what we pay. And as such, you lose that inspector. So this is an ongoing kind of a challenge that will remain with us, because on one hand, you have got challenges on the limits of the budget that you can get from treasury. But that does not suggest that we should relax and not strengthen our program to train and retain inspectors as much as we can. And I think the same applies to all our labor laws. And I'm glad that honorable members, honorable Masrumule, indicated that labor is a cross-cutting matter. Now, inspection, therefore, if labor is a cross-cutting matter, it also means that inspection must be shared. The reason why the Department of Labor has allowed a stop order facility for unions to deduct from the payroll of workers their trade union dues on a monthly basis was to allow trade unions to function properly so that they can have the infrastructure capacity and to fund their offices. But that was done precisely because we realized the importance of strong unions and the importance of unions assisting the department. I mean, the trade unions play or should be playing a major role in educating their members and in ensuring that issues of occupational health and safety, of abuse of workers, should not be happening in workplaces where they are organized, and that it frees the Department of Labor to then concentrate on those sectors that are not organized. But unfortunately, we still find ourselves being involved more and more, even in those sections where there are unions, because some unions are very weak. We must say that. And I think we have raised this issue. The minister raised this issue with quite a number of trade unions to say, we have done everything that we can to strengthen you and to make sure that you have resources. But you keep on blaming the Department of Labor as if shop stewards or inspectors are supposed to play the role of shop stewards. Any payment that is not being made to a worker, instead of a shop steward taking that matter up, some shop stewards refer them to the Department of Labor to take up the matter with an employer. And I think some of these issues are things that we keep on raising with our colleagues in the trade union movement to say that it's high time we also play a role so as to assist the department in alleviating this problem. Productivity and growth, I think, Honorable Mtaung, there are a number of interventions. We have the unemployment insurance fund in this department, which has reserves in excess of 57 billion rand, and the compensation fund in excess of 27 billion rand. Now, that money is invested with the Public Investment Corporation under the conditions that they should use that money to create employment. You may see the airport in Cape Town, the Johannesburg International, and the freeways in Johannesburg. Those improvements projects were also done with workers' money that was invested with the PIC. that we collect on a monthly basis, the 1% employer contribution and the employee contribution that is invested with the PIP. What we have resolved to do is to tighten the agreement so that when the annual reports of the PIC and the Department of Labor reports is tabled and the UI and the CF, we can be able to say from the investment that we make with the PIC, these are the number of jobs and the projects that we invested in, and these are the number of jobs that they created as part of them. Because we give them that money at very, very low interest rate. We charge only standard rates that are between 5 and 7%. We in turn get the prime rates that are 11 to 20%. So that is how we contribute to employment growth. But also, Productivity SA has a social plan program that is aimed at, it has three levels. The first phase is to try and save a company from going down and to improve its production efficiency processes.
Can I say that I think that's enough for that process for now? Because we'll be going into strategic planning where all these different divisions will give, you know, what they do. And we cannot in one sitting brief the new members about what the divisions are doing. But I think what we'll do, Mr. Nele, the committee secretary, will have to make packages for the new members so that they can update themselves with what is happening. And then we'll give them phone numbers of management so that if there are further questions that they need to, you know, clarity on other issues, they can phone those people directly or talk to us who have been in the committee longer or the committee secretary. And this will include even access to old minutes and other records of the college. I think let's leave it at that for now, if it is okay with Motau and yeah, okay. No, thank you. Thanks a lot. And I'll say that for all of us, not only for the new members, that we have an advantage in this committee. We've got a minister who is very passionate about matters of labor. So anything to do with the rights of workers, and of course, including even assisting industry to be able to, you know, to follow the laws, implement them. She's very passionate about those things. But more particularly, the Women on Farms project is one of very serious interest. Even when we go out on the field, she will make it a point that she talks to women farm workers. And I think that for us it's our strength. We don't have somebody who wants to defend what the department does if there are shortcomings. The minister definitely won't be on the side. She won't see herself defending what she thinks is right. I mean, it's wrong. So, and I think that is a strength for all of us. For the department, it gives them even more motivation to do more, because we're working with a person who's hands-on on matters of labor, particularly in relation to vulnerable workers. So there's no need for us to be tense on both sides of this table, because the person at the center is a unifying person. So let's do that. Together, we ourselves as a committee, with the minister, we are cooperating and sharing information on almost everything. There's no information that won't be made available to the committee if we request it through the right channels, and the channels will know about them all. But if anything that goes to the minister, it has to go through the committee, through the parliament liaison officer. You know, I nearly said provincial, you know, through our Palestine, the PLO, our Palestinian connection. But I just want to say, I think what all these things says to me, us, is that the Department of Labor need to raise the bar when it comes to communication. Because you see, we have agreed with the Farmers Union that we'll give them information, they'll disseminate it to the farmers. But what has become I think what I noticed in all these meetings that we held with the farm workers during inspections is that farmers are willing to change, but they don't get information. I've never met any farmer who was hostile, who said, this may plus and what, this is my property, get away. And for me, knowing where we come from as a country and seeing where we are now, I see that there's progress. But for a person who was born yesterday, he will think things are worse, that there were never anything worse than what is prevailing. Actually, things are getting better, and the farmers are willing to learn. And they're even saying, give us the training. And we've even offered to help them where necessary with management of their, with management of their farms. Or where they are to lay off workers because of other reasons, it could be climate change and others. The department is willing to help, to help them with how to address those. Where they are forced to lay off workers, the department actually goes out of their way to say, don't lay off these workers, we'll pay them as the department. We'll give out money to these workers for a period of so many months, hoping that during that period a miracle will happen, we'll find solutions. So the relationship that is there between us and the farmers is supposed to be mutual. But because the people who are communicating in the middle are not communicating properly. So the challenge is with us, communication, that while we give information to AgriSA, we need to carbon copy the local farmers unions. There were issues raised by the NGOs that, including Human Rights Watch, that why is the department making appointments when they want to meet with farmers? And I said to them, you are talking from an ivory tower. You are watching the farms as you go on wine tasting. Go to the farm on a Tuesday, 11 o'clock, when people are working, and just go in there and say, I'm around, and see what will happen. We had areas where the farms were protected by commandos. There were booms everywhere, roadblocks laid by citizens. Those things are gone. Now, the safety of the farm remains with the farmer himself. And where a person can get the most vicious dogs, he'll definitely go and buy them to protect him or herself. So it becomes necessary sometime to tell the farmers that we are coming on your property. But after establishing the relationship, then you make appointments, you can go there without having to phone, because already you are known by the security and everybody. It's a very difficult one, because people say when you make an appointment, they're going to give you a red carpet to you. But you see, the red carpet won't cover the housing. The red carpet is not going to change the books. The red carpet is not going to say this is how much people are paid. The red carpet won't say these are the registers of workers are in place. So there is nothing like people will, okay, some things maybe there could be improvement here and there when people know that we're coming. Like we know that on some farms, the farmer went to hire toilets, mobile toilets, because they were going to go on an inspection. But that for me is an advantage, you see, because we found the toilet. We ignore this information that we get from the workers that these toilets were put there yesterday. We say no. It's okay, it's an achievement. Let's wait and see if he's going to remove them. Next time when he come and the toilets are removed, then it becomes a crime because there was a toilet here and then you removed it. You know? Are you punishing the workers, baby, because it didn't rain last week? Because, you know, but I was saying to them that, no, or to the members that, let's not make noise about this thing that the toilet we put yesterday. You know, that this thing is a victory, it is an achievement. So there is a lot to learn as we go. Both of us are learning. The question of inspection is it's learning. You learn every day as an inspector because all farms are not the same. And sometimes inspectors are forced to think on their feet. It's very difficult, members, and we all went through the weather, the temperature. In some areas it was 37, 35 degrees. And we only went there with umbrellas, those were the umbrellas. But for the for the inspector, if we're in that area, we are faced with that reality for the whole day. And you are not even getting smiles square when you arrive on the farms. So I think the other, how do you say, going to raise this during the strategic planning because I think they belong there. Instead of thinking about upping the number of farms that people inspect, because in the process, quality disappeared. You know, there were farms that were visited by inspectors. And when we went there during this visit, we realized that those inspectors did not check this, they did not check the other thing, blah, blah, blah. Maybe because it was towards the end of the day and it's shady time and there's a transport, there's a parking problem or people are sharing cars with some people in different farms. Then you must go and collect them at the end, you know. So need for resources, it's upon us. I think as the committee, we need to support this committee that they should get more money to be able to meet this Millennium Development Goals, you know, and do away with poverty within our communities and ensure that other South Africans enjoy the freedom that others are enjoying. Because with farm workers, where I went on the farms that I visited, it's not as yet good. In fact, even the cocks that crow in the morning, the freedom cocks, they are not even hearing those crows in the morning. Next, they are not hearing even those chickens. They are very, very far away. So, if we give you support and you promise that you are going to do to double your energies, I think we'll both go further far in improving lives of people. Let me thank everybody and adjourn this meeting until we meet again. Thank you very much, everybody, all who came to the meeting.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I do the